just a minute. Hello?
Okay. Hello, it sounds like other people are beeping in. If you're interested in telling us who you are, feel free, and if not, that's fine too. Okay. I know a few people flashed in while I was gone. Is that right? I heard some beeps as I came back.
Yes, Suzanne and Mary Lou and maybe someone else.
Okay. All right. Good evening and welcome to the call. I am a timely person, so I always try to get these calls started right on time. And it's possible that other people may beep in, and we'll just hear them beep in, and unfortunately we're just going to have to ignore them as they beep in, and I may give a reminder about muting the call. So before we get started, I just appreciate it if everyone would kindly hit the 6 button on your phone, and what that will do is mute you so that we don't hear any barking dogs or any noise in the background. So if you're on the call, other than Dr. Stephen and myself, I'd appreciate it if you'd push the 6 button. That way you'll be able to hear, but we won't be able to hear anything going on at your home. Okay? So if you do that now, that would be great.
Is that star 6, Dante, or just 6?
6.
Just 6, okay.
Okay. At the end of our interview, we'll have some time for a few questions and answers, and then at that time, you can simply hit the 6 button again, and you'll be able to hear and speak at the same time. So I will interview Dr. Stephen, and then we'll open the lines for a few questions. So I am going to get started. For those of you who are guests of Dr. Stephen, I am Dotsie Bregel. I'm the founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, and also the number one site on all search engines for baby boomer women, which is www.boomerwomenspeak.com. The address for the National Association is www.nabbw.com. I am passionate about educating and empowering midlife women. Since launching Boomer Women Speak several years ago, I have been connecting, encouraging, and supporting boomer women on a daily basis. I have my finger on the pulse of the spirited generation, and I love nothing more than to stay in touch with women from our generation who are interested in educating and being educated and feeling empowered. I've been mentioned in Time Magazine and the AARP Bulletin among dozens of newspapers across the nation, and those mentions have been either for the Boomer Women Speak site or the National Association of Baby Boomer Women. I frequently do radio interviews, and I've been interviewed for many publications. Let's see, I've also helped the NBC Nightly News as far as helping them have some different guests on their show who have been members of the association. And I can be reached through either site at dots@boomerwomenspeak.com or dots@nabbw.com. And the toll-free number is 1-877-BE-BOOMER. Okay, tonight I am especially interested in this topic because, as many of you know, my nest is emptying. One has left. One child, the oldest, has left last Thursday, and he's a senior in college. I have another one leaving this Thursday, and then another, the youngest, leaving in a couple weeks. And it was at this time in my mother's life that she became depressed. And so this is a topic of interest that's near and dear to my heart because I'm afraid that I might follow in my mother's footsteps. So this is preventive medicine for me. So I'm really grateful that Dr. Karen Stephen has agreed to be on the call and help educate us in this area. For those of you who have just joined, if you would be kind enough to push the 6 button on your phone, and that will mute you so that we can't hear any background noise during the call. But after about 40 minutes, we will have a question and answer session with Dr. Stephen. And at that time, if you want to ask a question, all you have to do is push the 6 button, and you'll be able to ask your question. Okay, so our guest for this evening is Dr. Karen Stephen. And some of you know her from our forums at Boomer Women Speak, where she willingly shares advice for members about mental health issues, among other valuable information that pertain to midlife women. Some of you know her as Dr. Flamingo from her site, which is www.drflamingo-online.com. Others may have read her fiction book, which is called Degrees of Obsession, and she also has a website for that, which is www.degreesofobsession.com. So as you can tell, she's a pretty rounded woman, and I believe is really going to be able to help us out this evening. Dr. Stephen received her PhD at the University of Illinois in 1970. She's a licensed clinical psychologist and has been practicing for 37 years. She's single and has two grown children and two grandsons. She currently works for Kaiser Permanente in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there she works for the Department of Psychiatry and one of their medical centers. She specializes in the treatment of women, especially midlife issues. And one of the things that has really attracted me to Dr. Stephen is the fact that she has run a support group for midlife women for over 15 years. So she is very familiar with our issues and is very comfortable, you know, just discussing them and sharing her insight. Again, she has her online presence at drflamingo-online.com, and on her site, she offers all the advice that she's given to midlife women through the years in kind of a fun flamingo animated format. Her latest addition to that site is that you can purchase merchandise that has little sayings on it, and as far as interests other than midlife women and mental health, she plays the harpsichord, she collects antiques, of course, flamingo stuff, and she is involved with her church and family. So I'd just like to welcome Dr. Stephen to the call. Hello, Dr. Stephen.
Hi. Thank you for the nice welcome.
You're welcome. And tonight, Dr. Stephen is going to share the top four reasons why women in their midlife years seek psychological help. She's also going to give us information about when and where to seek professional help for the mental and emotional problems that we have in our own lives and in the lives of family members. And then she will present five simple guidelines to increase our emotional well-being regardless of the stressors in our lives, because we all know that we have them, and we also know that they can be very different from one another, but also at the same time, you know, we can have very similar stressors, whether it's caring for our teenagers or caring for our parents and menopause issues, et cetera. So anyway, we're going to get started, and if you're interested, you might want to take notes. We will be giving some resources, which would be other websites and books, and then you just might want to, you know, keep track of what she has to say. Okay, Dr. Stephen, if you'd be kind enough to share the top four reasons why women in midlife need to seek psychological help.
Okay, I think the first thing about it is that women that are in their midlife years very rarely seek help just on their own, and they very rarely seek it for themselves. But they do get to psychiatry or to private therapists, and these are the four reasons how they get, and the ways that they kind of get there. The top reason that you get referred to psychiatry is that you cry in your doctor's office. You go in because your diabetes is out of control, or your pain from your back injury is worse, or your fibromyalgia is kicking up, or your menopausal symptoms have gotten worse, or you're feeling just tired or ill in some other way. And you go in, and they kind of check you out and then find that there isn't anything particularly medically that needs to be done or attended to, and they ask you, well, is there anything going on in your life that might be causing you stress? At that point, of course, everyone breaks into tears. And particularly if you're in a male provider's office, a male physician, your family doctor, they're very likely to rush you off to the nearest counseling center because they, you know, very often do not have to deal with what's going on, and they're assuming that, you know, you need some kind of counseling help, and of course you do, but many women that come to my women's midlife group have been sent by their primary care provider, and they don't quite understand why they just didn't get another prescription or just kind of some kind of advice that was medical advice and why they got sent to psychiatry. And they, you know, don't quite understand the link between our bodies kind of falling apart and the stressors in our life. But that's one of the things we learn and we teach people, to help teach people about over time. The second is that, you know, they may not even notice it themselves, but somebody that loves them notices that they have symptoms of depression. They may not label it as such, but they know themselves maybe that they're very, very tired. Other people tell them they're more irritable, that they're more snappy. They know perhaps at work someone saying, well, your concentration isn't as good as it used to be. They know they're getting a little more tearful at times and sometimes without much reason. They feel like sometimes the things they used to really enjoy certain activities at church or, you know, going for a walk, now they don't enjoy it anymore. And they're beginning to, although they fall asleep all right, they're beginning to wake up in the middle of the night. And many, many people do not know that these are the classic symptoms of clinical depression and another reason why people need to seek professional help. But very often they're things that they're not even, they've kind of accommodated to. They know they're going through these stressful times, and they've just kind of got used to being up in the middle of the night and crying at the drop of a hat. So sometimes other people, they'll say, you know, you're so much more irritable. That encourages them to come in. The other reasons they come in to fix other people. Many women in their midlife years, and I define midlife as anything between 40 and death. So, you know, it doesn't matter, they're 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever. They come in, they're trying to fix adult children. They have adult children that are mentally ill, have particularly bipolar. They have adult children that are addicted. They have adult children that are simply haven't moved out of the nest. They haven't, you know, there hasn't been a healthy environment for them to be independent. And they come in asking not for themselves, but they ask, what can I do to help my child still? And it's that endless mother in all of us. And the last one, they come to fix their husbands or their partners. And basically, there's something going on. Some of them have tolerated even decades of verbal abuse, even sometimes with physical abuse. They've been dealing with alcoholism in a partner for a very long period of time. And again, they don't see that they need support and help themselves, which is where we're eventually going to lead them, but they think that they could come in and get some advice from us as professionals about what they could do for this other person. So you can see they come and they come and get help. But very often it's not for themselves, and it's not until they've been symptomatic for a very long period of time.
So have you found that the majority of the time that women come, they're kind of at their wit's end?
Well, they are at their wit's end. They've run out. They've tried everything. They've run the gamut of trying to get someone to stop drinking or to help that adult child. They've followed the medical advice. They've tried to feel better. They've taken the black co-wash for their menopause. You know, they've done things. They've tried to take care of themselves. And, yes, they've kind of run out of ideas. And so then they end up in our office.
And you see this happening in your practice, especially at midlife. And would it be fair to say that by this point in time in our lives, we've had it perhaps with whatever this issue may be with an adult child or with a spouse or, you know, a parent or whatever. And I think, you know, does it like build up and then we realize we can't fix it?
Right. It certainly does build up. I don't even think women really realize they can't fix it. They just think they need some other ideas about how to fix it.
Right.
But it does build up for a very long time. And because they have, you know, I call the name for our group, for our midlife group, is the group for the formerly strong. Because every single woman comes in there and says, I used to be so strong. And, of course, they were. They did everything. They were kind of super moms. And now they've kind of fallen apart, and they've been falling apart for some time. And they really do get to the point where they're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and that's when they show up.
Right. All right. Okay, do you have any little stories or scenarios that you could share from someone who has come to the group that has come, you know, and is clinically depressed but really was clueless about that? I mean, I'm sure that happens.
Many people are clueless about being clinically depressed.
Okay.
Because male and female, any age, because the symptoms are primarily physical. Some people don't even have a depressed mood, or at least they can't even really recognize that. They know they're unhappy, mm-hmm. but they don't see it as depression. They don't recognize that the interrupted sleep, that the impaired concentration, that the irritability, the tearfulness, that inability to enjoy things anymore, and drop-dead tiredness are the symptoms of clinical depression. So it really helps when people have gone, for example, online and taken a little quiz mm-hmm. at a site that says, you know, to see if you have clinical depression, or sometimes in the doctor's office there's a little pamphlet or handout, and they check through the symptoms and they say, oh, you know, I'm depressed. And really, no, a tremendous number of people do not know that that means that they're clinically depressed.
Okay, yeah, I find that interesting. And actually, we will share later on in the call some websites that you can visit that may have some of those tests or just more information.
Right,
so.
And the other thing, in the first four columns that I wrote for the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which are still on the site under my columns, the old columns you've listed underneath the current column. And those are all on all this information about depression, about each of the symptoms, and about how people get help, about medications, and so on. So that's a good resource for everyone.
Sure. So you would go to www.nabbw.com
right.
and click on Karen Steven, and
right.
it'll take you to her page. And her most recent article will be available. And then beneath that article, you'll see all of her past articles archived. So, you know, just to follow up to this call, you may be interested in looking into some of that.
Right.
Okay, Dr. Steven, why don't we move on then to the when and where to seek professional help when we're feeling sad or bummed out or just to the point where we just can't stand it anymore.
Right. Well, I think the first thing, the when is probably you should have done it 3 years ago, you know,
mm-hmm.
but it's
mm-hmm.
never too late. So if it really is getting, even if you're getting to the, I think what people learn after they've been treated the first time and if their depression comes back again, that once they've experienced symptoms for maybe a month to 6 weeks and they haven't gone away, I mean, everybody can have an upsetting event in their life and cry and have disrupted sleep and their appetite goes away for a few days or a couple weeks. But if it persists for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks or particularly up to like 3 months, then definitely is a time to at least go get assessed with depression at least to see if it's there. Or if it's truly interrupting your functioning in your life. If your panic attacks are so severe that you're no longer able to drive to work, then it's time to get some help right away. So it depends on how much it's impairing your actual day-to-day functioning. If it's making it impossible for you to be at work, you're going to have to go get some professional help because you have to be written off work. And or if it's really otherwise impairing, or things like you're not grooming, you're not doing your daily grooming, you're not getting out of your jammies.
Mm-hmm.
You're staying in bed all day. Those are real signs that at this point you really do need some professional help, or at least talk to a friend, talk to a pastor, talk to someone, and begin to see what actions you might take to start feeling better. And also, of course, we always want to encourage people that any thoughts of harming themselves or harming anyone else, Or, if you know someone in your family and that's the situation, that's a time not only to get help, but if it's really critical and it's here and it's now and today somebody is in danger, then sometimes calling the police is the most important thing to do because they're the only ones that have the capacity to do an assessment and actually put somebody on an involuntary hold so to keep them from harming themselves or harming others. And the other place people can go when they feel like that is just to the nearest emergency room because it can be taken care of there and that immediate help can be given. So I don't encourage people when they're feeling suicidal or homicidal to, you know, kind of put it off and make an appointment 3 weeks from now. You know, you need some help today, and that means an emergency room or whatever emergent or urgent services you have through your health plan.
Okay, if I could just interject something here that I've learned that I think is pretty important that I'd like to share as far as when to do it, and
mm-hmm.
you can tell me if this rings true to
mm-hmm.
you. Actually, the sooner the better. And I'll share why. I was in a car accident several years ago, and after the accident, I became depressed. And I didn't know that I was depressed.
Right.
I just thought I was sad because I couldn't care for my children. My shoulder hurt. I was living in pain.
Right.
But I didn't realize I was depressed. Well, a friend of mine basically threw me in the car and drove me to her therapist, and the therapist said, "You were clinically depressed." And I was like, "Huh?" And I was shocked.
Right.
Now, I was put on medication, and at that time what I was told was that I would have to take that medication for as long as I had felt blue. So I went back to when the car accident happened, and by that time it had been months. So I was told that I had to stay on the medicine for that period of time, and I did. However, when I first went on the medicine and the first bottle ran out, I was feeling great. The medicine really worked well for me within a couple of days. I was really fortunate. So I stopped taking it, and the blues came back.
Right.
So I, of course, refilled my medicine and stayed on it for a period of 9 months. And the thing that I would like to share is that I think some people think that once they're depressed forever.
No, there are really two kinds of major depression.
Mm-hmm.
There's the single episode kind where, you know, and there may be a precipitant with that or not. You don't necessarily have to have something to be clinically depressed. You can have family history of depression and get depressed out of the blue.
Sure.
And so there are some people that have one major episode, and that's it. There's other people that have recurrent major depression. And
right.
That means they have an episode. They might very well take medication for 6 months, a year, 2 years, 10 years, go off their medication, and then 2 years later have another episode and go be put back on medication. So, and some just stay on medication who have recurrent. So it really does occur in two different ways.
Right. Okay. And I guess would just like to share, to give some people hope that, you know, since that period of time, I came up against a couple surgeries and my mother's diagnosis of cancer, and they were giving her 6 months to live. And all of those things were very depressing, very sad events, and I was thinking, oh no, am I going to get depressed? Fortunately, I didn't, but my feeling was, if I do, I take this medicine and I feel better.
Right.
So it really just gave me great hope, and I still have that hope, knowing that should the depression happen again, you know, there's help.
The other thing is, the really recommended treatment for depression is medication and the combination of therapy between cognitive behavioral therapy, where you learn behaviors that actually make a difference in terms of depression. So if people get that kind of treatment and they have another episode, sometimes they can go back to be sure they're getting their daily exercise, be sure they're structuring their day, come back in for supportive therapy, and maybe not go back on medication again. So it's really returning to the whole treatment process as soon as you can, not just medication or therapy. You know, it depends on what works best for each individual.
Okay.
And of course, the time you take medication is up to most antidepressant medication does not kick in for 3 weeks. You have to be kind of persistent about taking it through that time. And it usually is advised to take 6 months to a year minimum. And not necessarily based on how long. That may have been something you were told, but, you know, I think most of our psychiatrists would say, you know, at least 6 months to a year. And it's always important to go off with the permission and the advice of the person who's prescribing it, because if people go off too suddenly on antidepressants, they get reactive depressions. It takes about 3 weeks because it takes it that long to get out of your system, but they will get more depressed than they were in the first place.
Oh, my.
They have to taper it off gradually, and whenever they're doing that, with the advice of their prescribing physician.
Okay. Well, Dr. Stephen, do you have anything else about the when and where to seek professional help?
Well, just the where kind of thing, just to give you an example, and I don't know how many have health plans that include mental health care. Of course, that's the first place you go. And of course, if you aren't covered with a health plan, you go through your county mental health services. But other places to think about, there are always private agencies that are funded, for example, by United Way, like family service agencies in many large cities. There's Catholic social services and Lutheran social services that both provide therapy on a sliding scale. And if people go even to private practice, group therapy is always, I think, number one, more effective, but always less expensive than individual therapy.
Mm.
And the kind of therapist that you get, if you have a marriage family, marriage and family counselor. They have the lowest rates. The licensed clinical social workers are the next scale up. Psychologists are the next scale up. And you only need a psychiatrist who's an MD if you actually are going to need medication. Most medication for depression is prescribed by primary care physicians. So the best place to go is just to your primary care physician or your OBGYN, and they can assess just simple depression, straightforward depression. If anybody thinks that they might have a mood disorder, they not only have had depressed times, but very high and happy times and been very manicky and not needed sleep and been up all night cleaning the house and so on, then they're probably better off seeing a psychiatrist who is more familiar with how to treat mood disorders, because the medications that are used for depression make mood disorders worse. And so it's very important that that's diagnosed properly. And then my other suggestion to people for getting help, if they, you know, either don't have mental health coverage or don't have access to it, there are lay counseling centers at many of the large churches in a town where lay people have been trained and supervised by licensed clinicians, and they provide one-on-one counseling. 12-step programs are a wonderful resource, AA, Al-Anon, Nar-Anon, all the programs that are both for recovery and for the family members of those in recovery. And then there's the whole world of sort of bibliotherapy, which we call fancy name for get a good book on self-help. And I do on my drflamingo-online.com site, I do have a whole series of pages on recommended reading. And all those books are ones that I'm familiar with. There's a section on self-help. There's a section on codependency. There's a section on sexuality. So you can go there and even order the books directly from there through Amazon, and some of those are, all of those I think are very good that I've listed there. So those
okay.
are some of the resources.
Okay, so that's a great resource, and if you're not sure of the exact web address, you can find it on the NABBW site, and
right.
there are links to that website.
Right.
Okay, so we have about 15 more minutes before we take questions. So are you finished with the when and where?
You know, I think so. I think the other thing is that there are, you know, other online sites. And I think it's probably best if people just sort of Google it and browse and kind of go through and see one that meets their needs. But when I look at those online sites, I think what are positive are like the chat rooms, even like the chat rooms you have on Boomer Women Speak for just general issues and even some of the mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And also informational sites that give you the little quiz on are you bipolar or are you depressed, and give you some suggestions about where to get help. What I do not suggest is that people get therapy online. There are resources for that now. I do not think it's appropriate. I think you need to see someone in person to really know how whether they're in danger or not, whether they need to be hospitalized or not, whether they, it's just, I don't think that the online therapy is a good idea, even though it's being done.
Okay.
So, and those people, you don't know whether they're licensed, whether they're got malpractice insurance and so on. I think you need to go to a licensed professional if you're going to do that.
Okay. I will share, when you're talking about forums, et cetera, on BoomerWomenSpeak.com, in those forums, we do have a mental health forum, and we also have forums for women's health and, our bodies, et cetera. And women often post about these things, and they might say that, you know, this is what I'm experiencing,
right.
and then other women can pipe in and say, you know, have you tried this, have you tried
right.
that? And I would say the majority of what goes on in there is just recommendations
right.
for vitamins and supplements that people are using at midlife. And then there are also, you know, there are some women in the forums who have mental health issues who are very open and very willing to share their
right.
experiences, whether it's their own or their spouse or a child, and that has been very helpful to women who visit
yeah,
the site.
I think it helps women to feel that they're not alone, and
yeah.
they're not the only ones suffering with that, and or have had that particular take on life or whatever,
right.
and I think it is very helpful. So,
okay, how about your 5 simple guidelines to increase
okay.
our emotional well-being?
Right. So people come in, you know, and by the end of the session, I've had had to diagnose them, and then I have to tell them what they need to do. And so I tried to come up with the things that I probably say the most and most often that probably have the most dramatic effect on changing our mood and our sense of well-being. Now, I'm ruling out someone who is homicidal or suicidal or whatever, you know, somebody or has a major mental illness like schizophrenia or bipolar 1 disorder and so on. I mean, obviously, they may need hospitalization and so on, and giving them advice to go walk each day is not going to help their mental disorder. But this is just for the general person that is really kind of suffering, maybe for the first time or maybe, for the second or third time, and with depression or anxiety. The first one is exercise. And I know that's what your physician says to you, when he talks about your hypertension or your diabetes or your weight. But this is not for those reasons, although it may very well help those reasons. But we know that walking or any kind of just mild aerobic exercise for 30 minutes a day has a tremendously helpful effect with depression. And it's because of the biochemical changes that start going on when we do our walking and get some aerobic exercise. They very much mimic what happens when we take antidepressants and actually bring more serotonin to the nerve synapses, and that's what improves our mood. So the exercise, not only does it help get someone out of the house and make them get out of their jammies and into their running clothes, their walking clothes, mm-hmm. But it really does directly, biologically help with clinical depression. So, for example, if I have someone who is clinically depressed but so sensitive to medications they cannot tolerate any of the antidepressants, then really upping that exercise even to an hour a day. And it doesn't have to be really strenuous. It just has to get your heart rate up a little bit, get a little bit of a sweat going. If you walk real slowly, then doing it for longer works. And if you can't walk at all, then doing something like Sit and Be Fit, the program that's on their public television channel, is wonderful. And I know it's on at 6 in the morning or something, but tape it and do it later in the day.
Okay, can you tell us the name of that program again?
Yes, it's called Sit and Be Fit, and usually it's carried on your public television station.
Okay, public television.
And
okay,
it's designed
good.
For older people, but it works real well if anybody has other kind of knee problems or whatever, they can't be walking.
Okay.
And it's upper body, primarily exercise, but it is aerobic, so it does help. The second thing that I always tell people and we always ask about is about substance use. And I have to tell you how much women underestimate how negative alcohol, the effect it has on your body. Women come in and they're not necessarily abusing alcohol. They're not necessarily physiologically dependent. They're having their 2 to 3 glasses of wine a night, or even 1 to 2 glasses a day, but pretty consistent. And when I get them to stop that alcohol and replace it with some exercise, within 3 to 4 weeks, they feel significantly better. Hmm. Women are affected more by alcohol than men, and they don't realize it. And because they're not abusing it, nobody's saying mom's an alcoholic or my wife's an alcoholic, they don't realize the negative impact. Also, when we give people antidepressants, we're trying to put serotonin into their nerve synapses. That's how they work. Alcohol takes it out. And so a lot of times people are taking their Prozac and they're drinking alcohol. It just completely negates the effect of the medication. And many primary care physicians are not good about telling women that they should not be drinking when they take an antidepressant. They tell them not to overdo it. But, they really need to be not drinking at all. But sometimes just cutting out the alcohol and doing it. Now, the other thing is if you attempt to cut it out and you can't do that, then you need a chemical dependency program or a recovery program, because then it's saying that you are at least psychologically dependent on it if you can't just take the advice and knock it off. And the other substance that creates most of the problems around mood and stuff is caffeine, because particularly for anyone that has panic disorder or any anxiety disorder, they cannot have any caffeine.
Ah, that's important.
Any caffeine triggers, chocolate, tea, coffee, anything that has caffeine in it will trigger panic attacks once panic disorder has gotten going or once anxiety has gotten going. I mean, we think of it as disrupting sleep and stuff, but then people say, oh, I just, drink my 2 cups of coffee in the morning. but that can affect anxiety. So some people would just, I probably have always had some low-level anxiety that was just kind of there, mm-hmm. and I quit caffeine about 4 years ago for other reasons, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden it was like gone. I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. It was actually caused by 1 to 2, you know, caffeinated drinks a day. So I always talk to every single woman about stopping the alcohol and stopping the caffeine.
Okay, that's great information.
And then, of course, if there's an abuse or a dependency problem, then, you know, you have to fix any kind of a real substance abuse problem first before you can fix anything else. There's
okay.
no way to get treatment for any mental disorder. We will not treat people in psychiatry. If they have a substance abuse disorder, they are going to chemical dependency, they are going to be in recovery, and then we look at what their mood looks like when they've been clean and sober for several months and decide whether they also need treatment for depression. But
okay.
you can't continue to drink and get help for depression. Alcohol is a central nervous system depressant, so you cannot drink and expect not to be depressed.
Okay.
So it's really important, even in moderate amounts. The third thing that I recommend is just somehow to reduce the social isolation, because when people get depressed particularly, or when they get panicky and then phobic and are afraid to go places and can't shop and can't drive and so on, is they become very socially isolated. And, you know, like you said at the beginning, you know, children are leaving at this point in life. Sometimes husbands are leaving at this point of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, parents that you've been taking care of, you know, are dying. And so people are even more isolated. And so anything people can do to force themselves out in at least once or twice a week, whether they join the Red Hat Society or they, you know, go to something at their church or synagogue, or they take a fun class, or they just go down and sit in the local coffee shop, you know,
mm-hmm.
or the dreaded senior center, of course, it would be something that would be helpful.
Okay, so get out and get about and get
right.
around people and
people
be social.
And if people can't do and actually meet people, you know, be social in person, then if they can start online, like the chat room
mm-hmm.
Or the forums, then that's marvelous, too, because at least you're not completely isolated. You're making contact with someone.
Okay.
The fourth thing is something that came from something I read way back in the 50s. There was a wonderful book called Prayer Can Change Your Life.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they recommended was that you should make one considered yes and one considered no each day of your life. Women are indiscriminate givers. They don't make considered choices about anything. They don't really consider their own feelings, particularly, or their own time or their energy. And they just do very often whatever they're asked. And so making a considered choice means that when you say yes, you mean yes, and when you say no, you mean no, and that you don't allow, you know, a no that's deep inside of you to come out of your mouth as a yes.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's what really creates probably the most, disruption in our feelings when we're doing that all the time. So actually practicing of making a good no and a good yes every day is a real positive thing. And then the last thing is just some kind of spiritual practice, whatever it is, whether, you know, if you have a religious practice, a Bible reading or a prayer time each day, or you explore something like mindful meditation, which is very good for people with chronic pain and chronic illness. Anything where you just, or you write in your journal for 15 minutes a day, or you
mm-hmm.
just sit quietly and listen to pretty music for 15 minutes a day. Anything where you just kind of allow yourself to just kind of be and just kind of not work on yourself and not work on anybody else, but just kind of be there and allow, you know, your higher power to kind of work through you, to kind of bring some healing, bring some affirmation. I think that's a very positive thing that people can introduce into their lives.
Okay, great. I would have to say that number four, I, you know, as I've told my children growing up, you know, life's a choice, and you know, every time you make a decision, you're either getting closer to, you know, who you are
uh-huh.
as a person or further away from it, and, you know, closer to wholeness or closer to God, whatever it is that you refer to it as. But I've never heard it explained as a considered yes or a considered no. And it really, you know, struck me when you said how important it is for us to say no when we mean no, and how it affects us when we say yes and we really mean no.
Right. I mean, that's what actually produces that incredible sense of that life is just unmanageable.
Right.
When people come in because everything in them has been saying no, and yes comes out of their mouth or in their behavior, you know. And so it's so hard for women to learn that. We practice saying no.
Yeah.
In our group sometime, and everybody just goes around, and I make them keep doing it until they sound like they mean it.
Right. And it's really about just being true to ourselves.
Right.
I mean, you know, and it sounds so simple, but it really isn't when you're raising a family and, you know, you have a spouse and you have parents,
right.
And, you know, and you know, the parent calls and says, can
right.
you please do this for me? And,
right.
you know, it's going to take you away from something else, but you feel obligated and you say yes, and then...
Right. The other thing is we become victims of our own image.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we produce such a positive image of a woman who does everything and always says yes and always can be counted on, is that we can't, you know, to kind of reverse that and begin setting some limits and making more considered choices, you know, makes us into kind of the bad guy, and we don't like that too much. You know?
Yeah.
It's a self-esteem issue, too, sometimes.
Yeah. And I guess another thing that we might want to mention before we do questions and answers is something that I think is really important. And that is asking for help. And I think that by midlife we've learned this, but we have to realize, you know, we've always been a generation that could have it all, do it all, be it all,
right.
the whole thing. But at midlife we're realizing that that's really, yeah, we can, but guess who suffers? And it's us that suffers. And I think we just need to dispel that whole superwoman myth and reach out to friends and family members and ask for help with simple things. I mean, a perfect
right.
example is a neighbor's going to the store. Can I get you some milk? Oh, no, I have to go later anyway, blah, blah, blah. Why
right.
not just say yes and let them pick up the darn milk and the other thing
right.
that you need? And that saves you a half an hour.
Well, and it is a practice skill. And when I see it most dramatically is when women have become very ill and get cancer or have operations or, you know, and they truly need someone to bring them to their sessions or to bring, you know, and they still struggle with asking. And so to get them to in the place where they could actually accept help from someone else is sometimes a real struggle.
Right. And I have to say I learned that personally myself by going through, you know, another rough time with an injury. And I couldn't do it all myself. I had to accept help. And then I realized how much joy it really brought people to help.
Right.
And then I thought about how much I enjoy helping others
right.
when I can. And it's so why rob one another of that joy if,
right.
if we really want to help each other?
You're allowing them to have a blessing in their life, so that's what you have.
Yeah. So anyway, do you have anything else to add before we go?
No, why don't we just open it up and see what any questions that people have or comments? I would love to respond.
Okay. If anyone has a question, please push the 6 button and then feel free to ask. And we'll see what happens here.
Hello out there.
Is anybody out there that wants to ask? I don't know, maybe. I'm hoping,
or comment.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's still not a topic that people don't want to talk about, you know?
Well, they don't have to ask about personal questions, but
mm-hmm.
if there
mm-hmm.
was just an area or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, does anybody want to push the 6 button and speak? Okay, if not.
Hi.
Hello.
This is Jane Carroll. I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed it. The information's very good. I work with clients in a coaching role, and you know, I think this information is information that I'm definitely going to be able to utilize in my work.
Okay, thank you very much.
So thank you.
Now.
Thanks, Jane. Okay, anybody else have any questions or comments? Anyone else? Okay, if anyone else wants to speak, feel free to speak. But while we're waiting, I just thought I would mention that on the Boomer Women Speak site, boomerwomenspeak.com, there is a page called Resources for Women. And if you click on that link, it will take you to the Resources for Women page, and you'll find a mental health link. And if you click on mental health, you'll see many, many sites that you can go to. And some of them have, you know, one of them is What's Eating You. Another one is Out of the Box, Midlife Adventure. We also have a link for a book written by a member of the association, and it's about depression and her battle with depression, and her name is Sharon Matthews, and her site is eagleborntofly.com, and you can find out about her book, which is a really great book. And then we also have links that are to different associations. We have one for teen drug abuse. We also have a link for Alcoholics Anonymous and alcoholism and the National Depressive and Manic Depressive Association. So anyway, if you look through there, you'll find the Anxiety Disorders Association. But anyway, I'm not going to mention all of them, but there are many. And you know, I think that would be a good resource if anyone's struggling or knows someone that is. They can go to, you know, that page and find some good resources.
One of the resources on there is the National Association for the Mentally Ill, NAMI.
Mm-hmm.
That's www.nami.org. And that's a wonderful organization for anyone that has a loved one, particularly that is bipolar or schizophrenia, particularly an adult child or a child, to really get support and help in knowing how to be helpful to someone else struggling with mental illness, and so that's a wonderful resource. And there's a government resource through the National Institute of Mental Health, and that one's www.nimh.nih.gov. That is the National Institute of Mental Health, and that has all, again, resources about descriptions about all the different mental disorders and where to get help. So that's another good resource.
Okay, and that's www.nimh for National
right.
Institute of Mental Health
right.
dot NIH for National Institute of Health
right.
dot gov.
Right.
Okay. All right. That's great. And do you know if on any of those sites they have any of these little quizzes or tests that you
mentioned?
Well,
you know, the one I think there's one called, and I don't know if I can get it up right now, but there's a couple. I think there's one called www.mentalhealth.com.
Okay.
And I think that one had ones that had the little quizzes on it. Some of the ones that are for, like, the Obsessive Compulsive Disorder organization, the professional organizations for
mm-hmm.
a particular disorder, they have the quizzes. So, and the same thing for the bipolar disorders. So.
Sure, and then people can always use, you know, a search engine to find.
And the other thing is people can also, I mean, I have, in addition to being able to sign up for my monthly newsletter that's in addition to my just being on the website, the Dr. Flamingo Online, is that you can also just contact me through that, through my email on that, and on the contact page. And if you had a particular question about a resource, I can try to find it for you. And the other resource I have on there, I have a daily support page, and people just write in and just kind of say what kind of support they want. They just want some encouragement or a little advice or what, and what the issue is, and they send it to Dr. Flamingo, which is me, and Dr. Flamingo writes back the next day and gives you a little free advice. So it's not doing like therapy over line, but maybe giving you a resource or just some affirmation in what you're trying to do. That's available, too.
Okay, good. If no one else has anything to say, I'd just like to say that this information is simply information, and that the National Association of Baby Boomer Women nor Dr. Stephen are to be held responsible, that if you know, you are experiencing, or if anyone you know is experiencing any type of sadness or depression, that you would contact your physician. And but also know that the association and Dr. Stephen are around to help and, you know, correspond online if that would be beneficial to you. Again, if anyone is a guest and not a member of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, we would love to have you join us, and you can do that at our site, www.nabbw.com, and you know, you can join this month and receive a copy of the Baby Boomers Almanac for free. So, and also if you refer anyone, you get a copy of that book for free also. So, Dr. Stephen, do you have anything else to add, or does anyone else have anything to add this evening?
The only thing I wanted to add is with my Love is Little products I have now, they're available through my website. You can have your very own thong with a flamingo on it and matching boxer shorts for your significant other with the same flamingo couple on it. So, I mean, just something fun and special if you want that. But I really enjoy it. Thank you all very much for tuning, for calling in and joining me in the seminar.
Okay.
Thank you for all the valuable information. And appreciate your putting on the call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else have anything to say before we sign off? Okay. Thanks, everyone, for being on the call. And we will make this link available, and we will be sending it to our members, and also Dr. Stephen will have it to send to her mailing list, and then it will be posted on the NABBW site. So thanks again for calling in, and feel free to email us through our sites if you have any other questions or concerns. Okay, thanks, and good night.
Good night, everyone.